Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Nutcracker Syndrome podcast. If you are here for the ketamine-assisted therapy series, I bring you session two, my follow-up, my thoughts on my second ketamine experience, which actually happened yesterday as of the recording of this episode. And I'll be honest with you, I think even just that, what I just said, which is that I'm recording this episode not even 24 hours later. Is great in the sense that my first session put me on my ass for 36 to 48 hours after that first one. I just was like so heavy mentally. If you listened to that episode, I definitely encourage you, if you found yourself here, if you're starting here, maybe do a little backtracking. Start with that intro EP where I kind of talk about you'll hear me talk about lay the foundation of my goals and stuff even prior to doing ketamine. This last, the episode session one, the last episode is me jabbering on about my first, some of the things, what I experienced, some of the things I downloaded after session one. And then I just had my second session. As a reminder, it's 6 sessions in 4 weeks is what the research shows is the efficacy that increases the efficacy of the protocol, increases the likelihood of it actually being beneficial to you. They quote roughly, 80% of people do actually get positive outcomes from this. So I am specifically going for A, my medical trauma of the last more acutely 3 years, but as we all know in the Nutcracker space, vascular compression, endometriosis, autoimmune, all of that. We've been dealing with it for way longer than like the acute, like something's gonna happen or I'm gonna kill myself. So I'm going primarily for the medical trauma. But also, I have CPTSD. I was diagnosed with that when I was 27 years old. And really just generational trauma. Both lines of my family are fucked up. So that's fun. But I want to, so for this session, I want to set the stage. Like, what was my second session like? As a reminder, my first session, they scheduled me for a block of 3 hours. I was only there for probably 2 hours and 15 minutes. This one, this session and the ones after, so the remaining, I'm scheduled for a block of 2 hours. However, they let me know, they're like, we like to do the 2 hours in case you need it, but really it's about an hour and a half. And that was really kind of right on the money for me. It was like five. I walked in at 4 o'clock, and like 5:30, my session was done. I called Kyle at 5:40. I remember my clock saying that. Just so you all are aware of kind of the time frame. When I went in, they let me pick which room I wanted to be in that I was most comfortable in, what was available, which was actually cool. I chose the room of. There was some artwork in there that was like super abstract that I was like, that just feels like the journey I want to be on. So went into that room. It's fairly cold in there. They had blankets, but for you, I would just say either call and ask that. Like, are there blankets? Like, do you have eye mask? I brought my eye mask with me, which I was glad it's a weighted eye mask. Because last time I almost felt like because I didn't have an eye mask, I had my eyes closed the whole time. But like having the eye mask, I was just like, okay, I'm fully like even if I open my eyes, it's gonna stay blackout. However, that can feel almost claustrophobic to people. There was one moment in the session that I was like, ooh, I actually took the eye mask off and just reacquainted myself with the room, and then went back in immediately. When I walked in, they let me choose my room. I went in there, I sat down. Three people walked in. And they were like, hey, we're actually gonna have a little bit, a couple more people. We have some students today, which I actually love it when they do that. I'm an educator, I'm a professor. I'm like, ah, please use me as a case study. So I was able to, like, for some of the people in the room, it was another opportunity for me to advocate for Nutcracker syndrome, tell them about that. They were just, again, another medical community that doesn't know about it. I asked them some follow-up questions to see if what I experienced since the last session to this session was normal. So some of the ones is on Sunday. So I had my first one on a Friday, my first session on a Friday. Sunday, I went to yoga, my 10 a.m. yoga class. And so 48 hours later, I'm going through the yoga class. I'm good. I'm good. And about 50 minutes in, so right at the end, we're about to get into Shavasana. And what I do in Shavasana, because I have vascular insufficiency in my legs, is I always go up against the wall and turn around and let my use that 10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, to let the blood come back to my heart. I've never had any issues doing that. And The moment I sat down, the moment I put my legs up, I immediately was like, I'm about to projectile vomit. And just so you all know about my physiology, I'm not a vomiter, which has been frustrating in the medical community because they're like, okay, you got to check all these boxes to get a diagnosis. And if some of the syndromes or whatever are like, well, you got to vomit, I'm like, I don't actually do that. My body doesn't respond that way. My body doesn't vomit. So if my body vomits, I'm like, something's really wrong. The last time I remember actually vomiting, where it was involuntary, I was like in the fourth grade. Okay. So just to set the picture. So when I lay down in yoga, something I've done, this isn't like I just started doing it. I was like, I gotta get up. I'm literally gonna vomit on the floor. So I get up, I go to the bathroom. I actually didn't vomit. Which I was glad. I don't like doing it. Who does? And went back to my mat and kind of was like, okay, that's weird. So I did ask them about that because they let me know that ketamine can make you very nauseous and that people do throw up on it. So I asked them about that. I said, could that have been ketamine related? They said, not as much. Usually the nausea and the vomiting is more acute, like when you're actually on the drug. And they were letting me know that ketamine actually wears off pretty quickly. And it did last night, honestly. So just so you know, that was an experience of mine. Something else I asked is after the first session, like Saturday when I woke up after my first session, I was like, I am never felt this mentally and emotionally heavy ever. And I've been through some shit. So I asked him about that. I said they actually said, yeah, that's normal. I was like, it was such massive mental and emotional fog. I was randomly crying, watching TV, even when it wasn't emotional moments. They said that was normal. And then I also asked, I wanted to follow up. I didn't ask in my first session, but I wanted to talk about periodization of dosing. I don't know if periodization is the right word, but it's what we use in applied sports psychology. What I mean by that is, am I going to do the same dose every time I'm in there? So my first session, I did 45 milligrams. And they were like, well, that's up to you. Like, we actually do kind of, from a periodized standpoint, we will up you. And they were like, what do you feel like this time? And I was like, well, I was kind of wondering if we could just go to 50 milligrams. Because, like, while my first session, I had the visuals and I had the colors and stuff, I felt like I could have gone deeper and really been in it and maybe processed more. So what was the funniest thing? Kyle and I were laughing afterwards because they were like, well, we were actually going to suggest to up you to 55 milligrams, so 10 milligrams more. And I go, this is the first place that I have ever come in to ask for a higher doses of something. And you come back and you're like, actually, we want to like give you more. Because as we know in the chronic illness space, especially like pain medication, for example, which ketamine is a pain medication, I'm not there. I guess indirectly, I'm treating some chronic pain. So I was like, gosh, this is, I was almost expecting, I had almost practiced in my head how I was going to ask to do more without coming off like I was some drug addict. You know how we do. And they were like, no, they upped me to the 10 milligrams. So I went from 45 last time to 55 this time. Not going to lie, I was like, okay, I'm game for the 55. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little nervous. So let's just like get the ball rolling. They offered again to do some Versed for me, which is good old anti-anxiety vein champagne. So I did opt into that. I'm always, when they offer it, I'm like, give it. Because I could tell, I mean, 10 milligrams, like I think about cannabis. Like, I've never really fucked around with more than 10 milligrams of a gummy. So I'm like, okay, if I went from that and then added another 10 milligrams, you know that the trip is like crazy. And I know it's just 45 to 55, so it's different. I'm not very, I never used ketamine recreationally. Me recreationally, I've only used shrooms, and I'm a microdoser baby. I'm not somebody that's a full send. I've never done a hero dose. I don't know if I ever will. So yeah, I was a little nervous on like, okay, I was kind of just wrapped my head around 5 milligrams. We're gonna do 10. Did the Versed. I also asked for the anti-nausea. I was like, I just would rather be preemptive about it. Something to also remember is that ketamine is a diuretic. I'm pretty sure that's the word. So it's gonna make you want to go pee. So they're always at the beginning are like, let's get you to go pee first. Come back in. We'll get you situated with the IV. And I'm glad I did because I did have to go to the restroom. I went. And then when I came back to kind of reality, got out of my ketamine-induced psychosis, it felt like psychosis might not be a good word, but it kind of felt like it a smidge. I woke, came back to my body. I was like, ooh, I gotta pee, like pee pee. And some of it, just so you all know, at least what I have learned in the mental health space, working both in Western and Eastern medicine in that regard, is that when you have a big release, sometimes it can lead to you throwing up. It can lead to you. One thing I actually do more often than not is belching is a way that my body kind of like physically releases stuff. It's not the most beautiful thing. My body's only ever done it when I'm by myself, thank God, because again, it's like it ain't pretty, but it's necessary. But I did feel like when I went to the restroom after this experience, and I'll go into more specifics on like what actually happened during the 55 milligram ketamine session. So I go to the bathroom to go pee, and I sat there for a long time. Like you would have thought I was going number two. And I was like, I've never peed this much. And it was like, oh, this isn't just peeing. This is like your body's way of getting rid of things, like physically getting rid of. Sweating is another way too. So that is kind of the beginning of the session, going into the session. Now for this session, let's see. What do I have? I wrote some of the stuff down because as much as I could, just to kind of remind myself, because it is very like time and space doesn't make sense. I've been struggling with that a little bit since I started, like minor issues. Like I was grading some student papers. I'm teaching a second injury class now. No, I've actually let the students know I'm doing ketamine assisted therapy for medical trauma, and that once I'm done, I'm actually going to share my lived experience with them as a modality to potentially refer clients to this when we're working in the injured illness space. Let's see. I did feel more objective throughout this session, so just the session overall, and then I'll get into the specifics of the psychedelics. I think I knew going into this, I did a lot of research. I also talked to a lot of people. The biggest thing that both of my psychiatrists told me, which makes me giggle, I'm like, I have two psychiatrists, was just let the session be what the session is. Try not to create narratives, and which we have a tendency to do. It's a protective mechanism. I will say I got nervous with them upping me to 55 milligrams, but I almost feel like that is the reason why I'm here less than 24 hours later recording this episode and woke up feeling pretty rejuvenated and not as heavy, is because I was able to go a lot deeper into the session, and I wasn't as aware of my surroundings like I was last time. And so I was able to more presently process versus last time. Now that I have this juxtaposition of this session to the last session, last time now felt like I went into the psychedelic space, but I almost got stuck in this like purgatory and didn't go as far as my body actually wanted to. So when I left, I remember feeling super wonky. I mean, some of this could just be what the first session's like. And then that night I did more processing, and then I had a lot of other stuff come up for me the next day. Whereas this 55 milligram session, I felt like I was pretty, again, it's an IV, so it's a slow drip. It really takes about, I felt like I was able to get into it not only more deeply but faster. And it just, I almost like once the ketamine was done and it wore off, it was like, okay, your session's done. Like you've processed what you needed to, versus me having to do all the after processing. So we got home about, session started at 4 p.m. I was done it. I called Kyle at 5:40. It's like a 40-minute drive down to Denver, which kind of sucks. It's so far away. Got home around 7 p.m. By the time we stopped and got McDonald's, I needed my emotional food. I w so, but I got home at 7, like brushed my teeth. I was in bed at like 7:30, asleep by 8. I mean, I took Versed. I mean, it's anti-anxiety. It makes you tired. You just did this like ketamine psychedelic experience. It's really exhausting. Went to bed promptly. I slept pretty well. Got up. My sleep score was like, you have a high sleep score. Slept for about 12 hours, similar as last time. But like I said, I didn't wake up feeling as heavy. I was very worried because I had a 9 a.m. appointment this morning, like a meeting that I could not reschedule. It was a very important meeting. And I was like, oh man, I don't know, like based on last time. But I was very surprisingly engaged, didn't just feel like I had some wacko psychedelic experience the day before. But I will say my dreams since have been a lot more vivid. I've been able, when I look at my sleep scores on the days that I at least the two instances, maybe this will change after the next four. I've been in REM sleep for like twice the amount of time, actually. And my dreams have been crazy vivid. Even though I have actually seen that I've upped my PTSD medication, my nightmare medication, it almost does feel like my mind body, it's almost just like, fuck this medication. We're gonna process some things. So I'm processing some of my fears during my sleep. I didn't anticipate that going in. It has kind of sucked. But I knew, like, yo, this is gonna open up a lot of things for you. So it, you know, even in the in an acute interim space, maybe we have to up your I will say, like last time, that heaviness, I was like, whoa, I went. Oh, one other thing I'll say is they have you at the very beginning complete a depression, the PHQ-9, and it's a depression score. With the first session, I scored a 9, which is mild depression. And I was like, hell yeah, good job. High five me. This time I went in, I was at a 13. I was moderate depression. And I was like, okay, but it matches my lived experience. I also asked about that. They said that is kind of normal, because again, you were being kind of thrown into the deep end. But I want to just reiterate that even though I'm getting thrown into the deep end, the ketamine has really helped. Like, I'm watching all this kind of, if this was happening in real life, it'd be scary as shit. But I'm like objective about it. And I think that's really the power in it. So some things that came up in the session, maybe this is what you're like, okay, finally, shut up about all the other stuff. What the fuck did you turn into while you were on ketamine? Well, this session, interestingly, it's very fluid. So it's almost like you have no control. The images are coming and going. You don't know how long they're going to stay there. If you try to stay there and hold on to it, it's going to dissipate and go to the next thing. So that's why it's like, don't even try to create a narrative. Just stay with the images and be with them. At one point, and I don't even know if this was in the beginning, in the middle, at the end, I became a plant. I don't know what type of plant, but I felt like I was the plant and I was zooming in to the roots of the plant. I became the roots of the plant. And then I could like viscerally feel myself sucking in the nutrients of the soil, basically the process of what a plant does to get food. That was really very interesting, actually. That was very comforting. Some of this could also be influenced by the fact that Kyle is a plant daddy. He is been teaching me a lot. He does full organic growing. He's been teaching me a lot about that. He talks a lot about it. We get ladybug in the summer when he's growing. We get ladybugs shipped like what feels like every couple of weeks. I'll get a text. It's like, yo, some ladybugs are sitting outside. Will you bring them in? Which is definitely new in my world, but also cool. I've also been watching a lot of documentaries on food and plants. Omnivore on Apple TV is actually very fascinating. I would very much encourage you all to go and watch that. So, but overall, like I said, it felt very comforting, like a reminder that there is literal soil out there that is another form that's nurturing us, right? That is the mother. Metaphorically, beyond, well, maybe not even metaphorically, but literally like Mother Earth, like something. I've been digging into a lot of different cultures and like looking into the history of witches and burning at the stake into these different cultures and death and things like that. And we as a Western society have gotten so far away from what it means to be a mother. Like, people think it's like, oh, to be a mother just means for you to have a kid and nurture that person. And it's like so interesting to look at the anthropology of these different cultures and how they actually look at not just raising kids and the traditional understanding of being a mother, and especially a biological mother and birthing a child, but really looking at mother as nurturer, as feminine energy, things of that nature. So I was reminded of that. I felt very comforted by that. And it actually now, like, I didn't think about this in the session because I'm just letting it go. But then, like, as I'm in the car with Kyle and then I go to sleep, I wake up this morning, I was actually reminded there's a lot of research that supports. I'll start with this. Big pharma is big pharma. It is a, at times, a necessary evil. Like, for example, I am on antidepressants now. So this is by no means me saying, like, yo, you should never use medication. Big pharma's just out to fuck you and make money. I think it's definitely something at times that's needed, but big pharma is created to make money. They don't give a shit about you, so they want you to become dependent. There's actually been a lot of research. There's a book out there called, let me, gosh, this is just now coming to me. Yeah. It's called The Lost Connections by Johann Hari. That's Johann for first name Johann, last name Hari, Hari. And I remember reading this book a couple years ago. Just I wasn't even on antidepressants at the moment, but what they were talking about is, again, the book isn't like antidepressants, you shouldn't do them, but the author themselves was like, yeah, I've been on antidepressants for my whole life, and interestingly, I'm always having to up my dose. I'm never like getting cured of it, right? So I'm always, it's like causing me to be dependent. And not only that, but I'm having to up my dose, up my dose, up my dose. I don't know. There's just something, what's going on? So he digs into it. He works with some researchers, and he even goes into the fact that, gosh, now that I'm even thinking about it, I'm going to use they, them pronouns because I don't, not 100% sure if that's, if he, him is that, and I don't want to assume. They go into speaking about, speaking to this team of researchers, and they actually, so just so you know, with FDA, I think they've changed it since this book. You can go and be like, yo, can I actually get the research studies that have been like submitted to you all that supports this drug? And that's when Johan came out and was like, it was wild because all that needs to be submitted to approve a drug through the FDA is you have to have two research publications that show positive outcomes for the use of the drug. And here's what's crazy, but it doesn't matter how many you submit. So you could submit 2,000 studies and only two out of 2,000, meaning 1,198 studies actually don't show efficacy of the drug at all. But the FDA, as long as you got two, they'll approve it and it'll be mass distribution, baby. So what Johan and his team of researchers, of professors, and they gather a massive amount of data on, I think, the top four Prozac, top four antidepressants. I forget all four. You'll have to read the details in the book. But they go and do all four. They diligently push that data, put it into an Excel spreadsheet, probably use SPSS, which is a statistical analysis program, to run the data. And they actually found it was a pretty significant percentage. I almost want to go as far as to say 70%, but again, go read the book, of the outcomes when they took all the data as a whole, not just the two studies that probably had so many limitations in it. But actually, 70% actually showed more that the placebo effect is what actually implemented and made the effects of the antidepressants work. And it was just like, ooh. At the end of the book, he actually shares a lot of the research on more current research that actually has more per not more. We all know the medical system. But a lot more doctors are starting to see the efficacy in not just prescribing an antidepressant, but also prescribing them to do community gardening work. Because reconnecting with the earth is actually a better antidepressant than the antidepressants medications are themselves. So that experience in the ketamine, I wanted to bring that up because I was like, oh, I'm like, I could feel that. Like, I could feel myself. Kyle's even talked about, like, a lot of gardeners, him included, when he goes and works with the soil, he doesn't wear gloves at all because there's actually benefit to having the soil and the microbiomes that are in it have direct contact with your skin and soaking them in that way. So just a reminder, I think this is me just saying, like, yo, one of the things that came out is like, go get dirty in the dirt. And I think there is something to do. There is something to that. The plant aspect of what I just talked to you all about was kind of the most, I don't want to say prolific. Some of the other things that came up were I was watching a lot of buildings being formed in front of me from the ground up. Some of them were fun and engaging, really colorful, wacky looking. And then others were very like, just New York skyline, dark, cold, black grays, felt really heavy. I again just tried to let the session flow as it did without creating any kind of narrative around, like, well, what does this mean? Like, what do these buildings mean? Oh my gosh, these are so fun. This is great. This is the part of me that I love. Like, I just let it go, let it come. Again, just letting the ketamine do its work, really. I did have this thought, though, like, I'll get these kind of inclinations. I wouldn't even say they're thoughts. It's just like a deep inner sense of knowing of, like, this is the ketamine doing its work on rebuilding myself from the ground up, you know? And even though the buildings that were kind of New York skyline, really like kind of dark, cold grays and blacks, that it, those are just as necessary as the fun, whimsical, and like our Western culture, especially, and probably just globally, we really are like, oh my gosh, like, we're so adverse to confrontation and to hardship and to what hurts, and that's a part of life. And so I kind of had that, like, a no, all of this is you, and it's about honoring both parts. Like, your shadow part isn't some, like, evil version of you. It's simply a version of you that you have been taught to exile. And so a lot of this, I've been bringing a lot of internal family systems into this, of like those buildings that felt dark and cold and weren't as fun, and you might not be as inclined, like, if I was given an option to walk into the fun, wacky, engaging buildings versus the dark and cold ones. You know, we as a society have a tendency to want to walk into the fun, engaging, colorful ones. And but by doing that and not actually creating a balance of walking into the dark, cold ones, you are mentally, emotionally, behaviorally imbalanced. And that is really, I mean, I've always kind of known, but I'm really getting a deeper sense of, like, no, that's actually what it is. And the vascular compression journey is definitely not a fun, colorful, engaging journey. It is definitely a cold, dark, clammy, not great, lots of tears building. And the thing about those buildings that are hard is sometimes we have no consent on whether, like, there isn't a choice on if we walk into it. You just one day wake up and you are diagnosed with this disease, illness, whatever. Quote unquote rare, but it's rarely diagnosed because the medical community doesn't give a shit, especially about women's health. And then there's men that are also dealing with this that now get caught in the crosshairs of that. And the list goes on. So you're not even giving a choice to walk into that building. And all of a sudden, you just one day find yourself in this really crabby waiting room that's metaphorically a medical waiting room. And you're in this building and you don't like it and you wish you want to be anywhere else but there. But I really felt a no, you need to be there. Like, this vascular compression journey you were just on. And I do have to say, I think I did as well of a job as I could during the process, especially now post-operatively. We're looking at, you know, a year and 1 month. So 11 total, or God, 11, 13 total months post-op for my auto transplant. I'm feeling so much better. You know, my life's, I'm starting to get my life back. Definitely some fallout from this. I did feel like I was as present as possible for that experience, and I think it's important for you to be. And at the same time, it's also important to dissociate as well. So, I don't think being engaged, that's a whole nother level of burnout. Another aspect that was pretty profound and I felt like extended last session was that I've been meditating a lot regarding the close, as we come to the close of the year of the snake and as we transition into the year of the horse. As a reminder, I'm recording this on January 22nd. I forget the exact date, but our New Year's, like December 31st into January 1st, is not the actual calendar date. I mean, that's the of which the year transitioning into the horse. So I want to say it's like end of January, if not like early February, mid-February, when the actual shift is going to happen, which is why I think a lot of people feel bamboozled at the beginning of this year. They're like, wait, 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 wait. We're supposed to be the year of the horse and things still feel weird. I mean, first of all, the administration in the United States sucks, but so there's some of that going on. But to bring this back to the session, I've been meditating a lot about the close of the year of the snake. And I also love the fact that I'm doing this ketamine-assisted therapy across a 4-week duration as we close the year of the snake and come into the year of the horse. Last session, I think I spoke about this, and maybe I'll share a little bit more detail. That I had an image in my first session of I was being swallowed by a, in that specific snake was like this green garden style snake. So the snake wasn't as big. I remember kind of it coming at me, but it never actually, like, I knew it was about to swallow me, but it never actually engulfed me. This session, it was not the same snake. It wasn't a green garden style snake. It was a more robust, red, scaly kind of snake. Almost looked dragon-like. Almost looked, gosh, like I'm trying to even think, but still snaky in its own right. And it did start swallowing me. Like I felt myself being like digested. Not fully. It was just my body. My head stayed outside of its mouth to where I was actually watching its body do its kind of like digesting stuff. I knew my body was in there being digested, and it was doing it at a way slower pace. And I just had this like internal sense of knowing, like almost as if it wanted me to feel every single moment of being swallowed whole. Like, don't let this pass you by. At one point, I did feel a very intense heaviness in my chest. Like I was kind of like, oh, okay, I'm getting a little anxious. I don't like this. I don't like this. So I just, that was actually when I said in the beginning, I had my mask kind of pulled it down a little bit. I was like, okay, like, pulled it down, took a deep breath, went back into it. And I actually, like, once I did that, the image actually crazily morphed into some funny looking yellow guys doing some somersaults over each other. What that means, I don't really know. I might even go as far as to say, like, those are some of my parts that I've already worked with in IFS that were just kind of there as a reminder to be like, yeah, we're here and we're happy and we're here with you, and you've helped to relieve us of our duties as protectors and, you know, firefighters, managers, protectors, and, you know, like kind of just like, hey, we're here. So those were the three kind of major downloads for me in the session. There was a lot of like last session that carried over into this time. Last session, as well as this, is I felt like there were a lot of moments of me looking through an actual microscope and watching the molecules in my being that were very heterogeneous turn homogeneous, and almost as if the ketamine was filling the gaps that were there where matter wasn't, and it became a solid structure, which is really cool. Again, I'm trying to just let it be what it is, but it also intuitively feels like it's like, yeah, the ketamine's here and it's helping to create these neural pathways and connect the dots on things that felt really like discombobulated and didn't make sense. However, I don't really have a conscious understanding of what those dots were and how they're even being connected. I just know they are. And to some sense, it's kind of nice. It's almost like having somebody just do your work for you. And you're just like, I don't really care how it gets done, just do it. So that was the session itself, kind of as a whole. It was a lot more intense, but not in a like, I only had that one instance with the snake that I was like, ooh, okay, I'm feeling real heaviness. I did sit with that heaviness, but I also was like, hey, just as a reminder, you have autonomy to remember that you don't have to just like sit in this the whole time. Some things that I was reminded of again with this, and I'm trying, I think this is also kind of the medicine is, you know, don't, like I've said a couple times, and I'll probably say it throughout all these episodes, is not to get caught up in the narrative of it all. And that essentially, like, maybe the medicine is just letting the ketamine do its thing and trusting that it's helping to rebrand your mental health. I like that. Being rebranded, if you will. Although rebrand is very, now that I think about it, I'm like, that's very capitalistic, but we'll work on that word. We'll do a little bit of editing revision. And maybe some of the issues and blocks and whatever you want to call it, performance breakdowns, as we call it in sports psychology, it's really just our egos trying to make sense of it all. And so there's this pretty cornerstone book in applied sports psychology called The Inner Game of Tennis. And it does a really good breakdown of when you're performing from part one and part two of self. So, part one, I don't know if that's exact language, but part one is very your like automatic. You're not really, your brain isn't, your brain is working for you rather than against you, and you're in a flow state. And then part two is very like almost as if like you have confidence in yourself, but you're giving yourself that 1 millisecond of like imposter syndrome to come in. And so that being a bit of a metaphor there of, I feel like ketamine is really helping me to see self one and self two and really put self two more to rest. And so that's what I've been trying to remind myself of, like, yeah, let's not get caught up into self two. Let's not, we don't have to create a narrative around this, that we don't have to come out and have a whole book written. Just let it be. It also, one thing I do want to end this episode with is it, a lot of the sessions, and it really didn't come to me this morning. It reminds me, like, when I'm just thinking back on the session, and again, not trying to create a narrative, but just trying to think about the images again that come up, and just letting those images still exist and be. It reminds me a bit of chaos theory, because it's very chaotic. If anybody's done psychedelics and done ketamine, and it is, it's it. It's just kind of, again, it's chaos. It's like one image after the other, and everything's morphing, and you don't have any control over stopping the image from morphing, and you just have to learn to live in the chaos, and whatever comes, comes. And so, for some of you, that's like, what the fuck is chaos theory? Chaos theory focuses on, and I got this legit just from the. I literally typed in was chaos theory so that I could tell you all. Because sometimes I was like, gosh, how would I even describe this? So it focuses on the underlying patterns and deterministic laws of dynamic systems that are highly sensitive to initial conditions. Okay. So let's go. So chaos theory states that within the apparent randomness of chaotic complex systems, which is exactly what the ketamine sessions feel like. There are underlying patterns, interconnections, constant feedback, loops, repetition, self-similarity, fractals, and self-organization. And I think some of it is just understanding that, like, I am in the throes of this chaos theory. Like, it is just, there are underlying patterns here. There is an interconnectedness with everything being thrown my way. And I think right now I'm just wanting to trust that my body somatically is reorganizing things, and my brain doesn't necessarily need to like have a rationale for it. I don't need to have a narrative either at all or just yet. I don't know. Maybe at the end of the 6 sessions, I'll just have this like aha moment. Here's all the, you've been with me through these 6 episodes, and maybe with time, I'll even have a couple like 3 months post, 6 months, a year, just for you all to like see how the ketamine is still working, and did it wear off after a month or something? But it does, like, my first session felt very chaotic, and I was able to see it. The first session brought me back to my mother's womb, and then when I did a lot of the when I got home and continued to do some meditation and leaning into it, I was able to experience myself in that first 6 weeks of my life. I was able to be like, to really engage with, like, this is why I have an autoimmune disorder. This is why I haven't felt safe in my family. This is why, like, maybe not like the why, but I was able at least to track it back that far in my life and know that this wasn't one. There was nothing I could have done to have prevented this, really. And then that's comforting to some extent. Like, it doesn't necessarily fix my autoimmune and fix my endometriosis and fix whatever. But it did help me to, you don't really realize how much you're like holding on to that shame of like, did I do something wrong? And I have felt like I've been able to let that go and not feel as responsible for how my body has been breaking down. Understanding this is very intergenerational, understanding a lot of the work I'm doing in ketamine therapy is intergenerational. Some of the things that might be even coming up for me in the sessions themselves that make no sense, such as the funny looking yellow guys doing somersaults over each other. Yeah, sure, those might be my parts. Maybe it was something from another relative of mine. I don't know. I don't like, that's the thing, is it just feels like how chaos theory is very much the root of the butterfly effect. And so maybe it is me processing some of those like lifetime agos. And actually, now that I'm even thinking about the lifetime agos, there was an instance of like I got this image of this man that was in the military. And I remember getting this thought of like, I think that's somebody who I was in a past life. And then the moment I had the thought, the image disappeared and went to something else. So again, was I a military man in a past life? I don't fucking know. But I have had a lot of, I mentioned in the last episode that I had a session where I was working with a medium, and that medium actually, like, we were able to connect with some of my ancestors, and one of them was actually the man that I was married to for lifetime after lifetime, and for whatever reason in this lifetime I'm not married to the bastard. So, and that felt viscerally real. I mean, so again, a lot of this, it's like not, again, not getting caught up in the narrative. So I hope listening to this episode is just, maybe it's just helping you be like, wow, that's cool hearing about this person's psychedelic experience. Maybe if you're thinking about doing ketamine-assisted therapy, I mean, in psychology, one of my favorite theories is uncertainty reduction theory turned uncertainty management theory. So, and I actually would love to propose a changing that theory to uncertainty management theory, which is that uncertainty is uncomfortable. We often seek to reduce and manage it. And more so, I'm trying to. There's a lot of things uncertain in my life. I don't know why I have some of these mental health issues. I don't know why I have some of these chronic illness issues. I might not ever know, and I feel like ketamine is helping me to become to just accept it a little bit more. But I just thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to my experience, even if it's just one of you. Recording these episodes selfishly have just been helpful for me to kind of digitally journal my experience. So I thank you for being here. I want to send you major hugs if you're somebody navigating vascular compressions, if you're somebody that knows a loved one navigating vascular compressions, that this is not easy. You are not alone. And at a minimum, you at least know I'm here. So reach out if you have any clarifying questions or need help with, need support. But I do welcome you to continue listening on if that is something that you feel called to do.